Blog Talk Radio.
Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older, and the treatment of adults. In other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. She's gone through all the trials and tribulations. If you're having a problem breaking through to that next level, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. Or if you're having a problem with anything in life and you need to talk to somebody, please give her a call. Or you can visit her at her office at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, Ty, it's great to have you back.
Well, thank you, sir. I am happy to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while, and we had a little scare here during the last week. our good friend Mr. Keith Thurman. Our listeners will remember he was on 2 weeks ago. Going home in a rainstorm, and here in Florida, the roads are made are paved with blacktop, but underneath is shale, and the shale comes through and makes a very gritty, very slick top when the rain comes down and stays. And Keith was on his way home the other day, not going that fast, but hydroplaned into a tree. He said that he's got a problem with his neck, and most of his injuries came from the airbags deploying.
Yeah, that's what I read. Yeah.
But thank God that he's okay. He expects he was at the doctor's on Wednesday, and he expects to be back in about 6 to 8 weeks. So that's great.
You know, when I first read about, you know, Keith's accident, and, you know, obviously after I read he was okay, the first thing that came to my mind was Ray Robinson.
Uh-huh,
we had
uh-huh.
just had him on the show, and he just had a fight postponed because of a car accident. So, you
right.
know, it's just kind of ironic and, you know, just kind of one of those superstitious kind of coincidences. So, you know, gratefully both guys are okay. And, you know, they'll resume their careers, you know, within a few weeks. But it's just, you know, every now and then life gets in the way of work and art and things
that's
that we're
right.
trying to get accomplished. So we're just happy that both gentlemen are okay. But that's who my mind instantly went to Ray, because he
right.
had just been through a similar situation. So
right. Yeah, that was the biggest fight in his life.
Exactly.
You know, he was going into
And this would have been Keith's biggest fight too.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, definitely. With Sean Porter, main event with Sean Porter, his first time
mm-hmm.
fighting, you know, a top 10 welterweight.
Right.
Current, you know, I mean, well, you know, Guerrero was rated top 10 there, but fighting a current top 10 prime welterweight, it was going to be the biggest fight, right, you know, of his career at this moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like Ray's, and all of a sudden, you know, these things creep up at times where we least expect them. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
just again, just thankful that both gentlemen are okay.
I did get a chance to talk to Ray earlier this week, and he and his bride and his little girl are down in Miami this week just for a little rest and relaxation. So he's doing well. He said that he's been going through, of course, a rehabilitative therapy, and that seems to be doing well. And the doctor told him that in about 4 or 5 weeks he'll be able to start working out and get back. He figured he'll drop his weight.
Yeah, just like Keith, about 7 to 8 weeks he's been out, huh?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
he's going to be out, yeah.
Yeah. But, we were supposed to have Jesse Hart on this afternoon, but Bam Roberts called and asked to do it next week because Jesse had something come up and they couldn't get him to a phone. So we'll have Jesse next week. But
I'm just happy Jesse hasn't been in a fender bender car accident like everybody else we have on the show, apparently. Have you called Tony this week just to make sure he's driving safely? Because, I mean, geez.
Yeah, we had Tony on last week.
I'm so sorry I missed Tony last week.
Yeah.
I definitely want to go back and listen to it because he's always an interesting interview. And he's got a big task ahead of him. So next week,
does.
Wow.
Yeah.
He
does.
I'm sure he's confident as ever, though. I know Tony. He's confident as ever.
Yeah. His one statement that got picked up by all the press was that if he had fought the guys that Ortiz had fought all year, that his record would be much better.
But, you know, there's some accuracy in that, though.
Yep.
And that was kind of, you know, the point I was bringing up to Zito, is that, I mean, Ortiz has a wonderful pedigree, tremendous credentials, part of, you
right.
know, the Cuban amateur system, which is, you know, considered for years, you know, maybe the top-flight amateur boxing program in the world.
Right.
But the fact of the matter, on the pro level, though, he hasn't faced the kind of obstacle that Tony presents to him. And some of the guys he's beaten, Latif Coyote, you know, some of these guys, Tony would have easily handled. You know,
sure.
the best win on Luis Ortiz's record is Bryant Jennings.
Right.
So, you know, no disrespect to, you know, bye-bye. Brian Jennings is a tremendous fighter. But Tony's fought Klitschko twice, so he's fought better than Brian Jennings. And so, I mean, there's a lot of accuracy to what he's saying about Luis Ortiz's record. And that's my only question with Ortiz. I see the guy can do everything, but he hasn't faced every style in the pros. Tony's a different style. Tony poses different attributes, brings different attributes to the table that Luis hasn't seen. And that's why I think it's an important showdown. That's why for me, like Dr. Chris, like Zito, even though I see what the guy can do, for me personally, the jury's still out until he does it against certain levels of competition with certain styles, like a Tony Thompson.
Right, right. Well, it's, speaking of styles, we have a Rumble in the Bumble coming up tonight with Mr. Hank Lundy and Terrence Bud Crawford.
Yeah, did you see the intense exchange at the weigh-in?
Yes, I did.
Bud gave him a pretty big shove there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what you got to remember is Hank Lundy is he's a lunch-pail Philly fighter. And,
right.
You know, the Philly fighters are going to get up in your face and try to get in your head, and that's what he's been doing to Crawford. And even Crawford acknowledged, you know, he came on Twitter and apologized for acting out of character. But he's acknowledged that, you know, that this has made him out of character a little bit. So Lundy feels he's in his head a little bit. A lot of the, you know, the boxing pundits feel that you don't want to get Terrence Crawford mad because then he fights with a mean streak, which makes him a little bit more venomous, which is what he showed against Thierry Jean. He was very venomous in that fight, fought very spitefully. And, you know, a lot of them think that he's going to do that against Hank Lundy. My only issue with Terrence Crawford is he's rated right now by the ring, I believe, as number 7 pound for pound. I don't see that. I think he has the talent. I think he has the ability. But I don't see a number 7 pound for pound resume on this guy. And beating a Hank Lundy does not elevate him any more than he already is, in my opinion. You know, since he's moved up to 140, he's fought Thomas DeLorme. And now Thomas DeLorme, Thierry Jean, and Hank Lundy. You know, Thierry Jean and Hank Lundy are from 135. And DeLorme, you know, DeLorme was, you know, he's a mediocre fighter to a certain extent. He's, you know, he's a fringe contender. So Terrence Crawford's level of opposition has not, to me, earned him kind of his status in the sport. Kind of very similar to Luis Ortiz, where I don't think Luis Ortiz's level of opposition has earned him the respect he's gleaned in the sport. I can see, looking at these guys, and both gentlemen passed the eye test, Butch. They both passed the eye test. But until you've been in a ring with the Tony Thompsons and these guys that are truth tellers, these guys that will reveal the truth about what kind of fighter you are, then to me personally, the jury's still out. And that's where I'm at with Crawford as well.
Sure. You know, it's funny because Crawford's trying to say that, Lundy can do all the trash talking he wants, but I'm going to show him with punches when I get him in there. He says, what I need to do is look out for his headbutts, his low blows, and his elbows. So he's doing enough trash talk on his own.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and I expect Crawford to beat Lundy. But see, I think that's the problem. I expect Crawford to beat Lundy. For me to anoint a guy pound for pound, sometimes you have to fight a guy where you're not so sure he's going to beat that guy. You know what I mean? Or a guy you know is going to challenge him. And they're bigger, better fighters for him at 140. Than Hank Lundy. I think this is a good fight. I think it's definitely a good stay busy fight. Hank Lundy always gives a good account of himself. He's never easy. I don't know on any given night he's capable of beating anybody. But the fact of the matter is we don't consider him in the same level of a Terrence Crawford type of fighter. But Terrence Crawford, because he's not fighting, you know, those elite fighters yet, to me, he hasn't proven that he's necessarily elite either. Remember when Lucien Boutte was destroying everybody at 168 who Andre Ward wasn't fighting? And he was looked at as the guy that, you know what, when the Super 6 tournament ends, whoever wins this tournament has to answer Lucien Boutte. And then he went and fought Carl Foch and got destroyed. So a lot of times these guys look good fighting a certain level of competition, but when you step up to the elites, that's when you really see how good a guy is. And again, Luis Ortiz and Crawford, though, you know, like everyone else, I'm very impressed with what I've seen. They still haven't fought the elite of their weight classes as of yet.
I'm going to, since we don't have Z here to carry on the conversation, I'm going to go ahead and call Chris on the air here. We'll get him on. get his ideas on this. I'm sure he'll have.
Outstanding, yeah. Yeah, there's a big fight going on right now, too, in the UK.
Yes.
Yeah, between Frampton and Quigg.
I looked at it before we went on to see if they had any results.
Now
the
telecast started at Showtime at 5:30, so I'm figuring they'll probably go to scratch around 6. So they're probably fighting right now. So, maybe what I'll do is I'll get off the air when we're done and try to catch
the cell phone
later.
Chris Panarello. He is unavailable to take your call at this time. Please leave him your name, number, and a brief message, and he will get back to you shortly. Thank you and have a great day.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording.
All right, what? Oh, we had a technical difficulty there. Ty got hung up, when we hung up on Dr. Chris, but he'll be calling back in just a second. In the meantime, we're going to be talking about the Lomachenko-Walters fight that's about to go on with Bob Arum trying to make a big fight out of it. It hasn't been signed yet, but the reports are that it'll be in New York City, and it'll be on HBO. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I see you got thrown off by Dr. Chris's secretary answering his phone, apparently, which was just very unlikely and odd to me. He was just caught me off guard when I heard that for his cell phone. So why am I not surprised, though? Isn't he retired?
Yeah. Did you see that thing I sent you from Dr. Ron about the elders USB port?
Oh, no. You know what? I saw it in my email. I didn't get a chance to go in yet there.
He said that's a new business for Chris to get into.
Oh, no.
But the other question I had for you was Bob Arum's coming out about a clash that he wants to make with Lomachenko and Walters.
They made it. It's signed. It is signed.
Yeah, the 30th.
From what I heard. I don't know. What are they fighting at 1:30?
Yes.
Because if you remember correctly, Nicholas Walters, they were both titles at 126. And so that was supposed to be a big unification fight. Then obviously Nick Walters had a fight, didn't make weight, was stripped of his title subsequently and moved up to fight at 130. His last fight was a draw. Lomachenko, about maybe 6 months to a year ago, said that he would not fight Walters at 130. He said, he said he didn't want to fight Walters anymore. He said he wanted to fight Walters because he wanted the title. He said once Walters was stripped of the title, there was no appeal, no allure in fighting Walters anymore. For me, part of the reason why I think that fight is made now at 130 is because over Walters' last two performances, he hasn't looked like that dominating killer that he looked like, that he looked at right at the time when he was stopping, Victor Chinian and Nonito Donaire. When he was coming off those streaks of fights, Lomachenko, his management was essentially saying they weren't looking to make that fight unless it was for a title. Once he got stripped of the title, subsequently he's had two kind of subpar performances. Now it seems like Lomachenko's like, I think I will take this fight. And honestly, I think Lomachenko beats him. I think the fight was a little closer at 126 about a year ago. I don't think Nick Walters hangs with Lomachenko right now.
No, I don't either. It will be on. It's on April 30th, and it will be on HBO. Also, in the month of April, I had a chance to visit with our good friend Mr. Edner Cherry. He'll be going to Oklahoma for the WBA title against a guy named Daniel Boyer out of Philadelphia. I got to check
Boyer's
with Russell Pell. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to run that yet, but.
And the only reason I ask is because I just read that there was a chance that Edner was going to be fighting on Showtime Extreme.
Yes.
Against an opponent who had like four losses, but was on a winning streak. Mm-hmm. And Showtime Extreme did not approve the fight. And the actual other gentleman, not Edner, But the other gentleman said, I guess they didn't like the fact that I had four or five losses or whatever. But I just read that today. I just couldn't remember the guy who they were talking about. So it's good to hear that Edner's got a fight lined up.
Yeah. I talked to him on – I was up to St. Pete on Tuesday and had some time to spend with him. And he's very – you know, of course, he's in terrific shape. He's sitting there – the whole time we're talking, he was skipping rope. And we talked for about, I'd say, at least a half hour. And he just kept on going. I mean, it's just,
it looks like
he's
threw a dart at Edner, would just bounce off his chest. Like he's just he's just physically very tight, and I mean, always looks tremendous. Always looks tremendous.
Yeah. He's you know, and of course, always has this, the attitude. I've never seen a guy down and out. He's gone through a lot of things personally in his life, and he did tell me that. The lovely Miss Elizabeth was in a car accident.
Oh, man.
Sometime a couple weeks ago, and she put her arm out. She's doing well, but she put her arm out to make sure that the kids weren't hurt. And evidently it jammed her shoulder, and she had some major problems. But according to Edner, everything's fine. You know, we're all doing good. Yeah, Edner, the world's coming to an end tomorrow. Okay, I'll be ready.
You know what? It's funny. I think I think Edner, and the way he is, it really says something about faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because he is always optimistic and, you know, just positive regardless of what's going on. And you know, I think a lot of us could learn from that. And again, to me, you know, and I'm a big fan. I was a fan of Edner's, you know, well before, you know, I've ever spoke to him. But the way he conducted himself after that Jorge Pedraza loss, that fight he should have won. And it's funny, in the article I read today, it still mentioned, you know, that Edner should probably be a lightweight champion. But the way he conducted himself was just, it was remarkable. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of the Republican and Democrat debates, and it's just like, man, how come these guys aren't watching Edner to learn how to behave themselves? But if they were, I wouldn't be enjoying it. Let's just be honest. If they were, I wouldn't be enjoying it. I mean, it's so entertaining, son.
So, I guess Mr. Deontay Wilder is going to take on a Mr. Alexander Povetkin.
It did go to purse bid.
Yeah.
And I believe he was picked up at purse bid. I forget by who, but for, I want to say $7-8 million, maybe a little over, but somewhere between $7 and $8 million. And I think they're looking to have that fight made in May. So it's very interesting fight. It's a fight a lot of fans have been waiting for.
Yeah. It should be interesting. Rubizinski is a guy that picked it up. He's a DiBello Entertainment.
DiBello got the purse bid?
No, DiBello got the first bid. He was $2 million. And Andre Robodzinski, World Boxing, won it at $7,150,000.
World Boxing, whatever, yeah. I knew it was over $7 million, between 7 and 8.
So they're going to move it. They're probably going to have the fight in Russia.
That's what I read.
Yeah,
you know, I tell you, it's funny because when Heyman came out with the PBC last year, a lot of the hardcore fans were criticizing it because, you know, obviously most of his fighters are fighting each other. And they were saying, you know, he's still not making the matches people want to see. You know, he's making a lot of soft touches. So far, going into this year, he's allowed one of his fighters, Amir Khan, to go ahead and fight a Golden Boy fighter in Canelo. He's allowing Deontay Wilder, one of his fighters, possibly to go to Russia to fight Povetkin, who's not one of his fighters. He's also making the Keith Thurman, Sean Porter fight, a fight that, you know, hardcore heads have been salivating about for the past 2 years. So it's funny because, you know, everybody was complaining about the fights that Heyman was putting together. And, you know, his team kept saying, well, they had their plan. And I think now what we're seeing is that plan come to fruition. You know what I mean? Because now you're seeing a lot of the fights that we wanted to see are getting made.
Yep. We'll try Chris one more time. He was probably out picking wood or something.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Frank, how are you? Just walked in the door.
That's what we said.
Yeah. Okay.
We're on with Ty.
Yeah, you can put me on.
Yep.
How you doing, Dr. Chris? Hanging in there, guys. I just fed the deer.
There you go.
You what?
I walk. I feed them every night. They wait out there for me.
Oh,
so I'm out of breath a little bit. I just ate something, too. How you guys doing?
Doing well, sir.
Doing well.
How's Keith, Frank?
He's doing well. He had some neck injuries. It was mostly from, and some body injuries from the airbags. But the doctor feels that he can be back into the gym in about 6 weeks. So nothing was broken then, huh?
No. Yeah, well, he'll be able to walk and run.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, he said
it was mostly just whiplash. Am I right, Butch?
Right.
Yeah.
And he said that his camp now went from preparing for a fight to preparing to get back into fighting. So
yeah,
he's still doing his physical stuff that he needs to get done whatever way he can, as lightly as he can, and then he'll keep when he gets the permission from the doctor, he'll just start moving it up.
So then Cherry, he just goes along and waits then, right?
No,
Edgar, isn't he on a semi wind up?
No, they bumped him from that card and gave him.
Oh,
a
yeah,
WBA,
they scrapped that card altogether, didn't they?
Yeah,
I believe they scrapped that card altogether. Yeah.
Yeah, they scrapped the whole card.
And what did they do? Put him on another one?
Yes, he's going to fight in April in Oklahoma. He's fighting a guy by the name of Danny Boyer from Philadelphia for a belt. The WBA belt. So,
all the way out to Oklahoma to fight a guy from Philly, huh? I never heard of the guy. Who the hell is Boyer?
Boyer. Yeah, I have no idea. But Ty, you want to tell him what you saw today?
I don't know. I don't know if it was Danny Boyer. It was just, again, it was just a little blurb stating that they were speaking of some fighter, and he was saying that he was looking to fight, that they were looking to make a fight between he and Edgar Cherry for Showtime. But Showtime didn't approve the fight, probably because, the other fighter wasn't a named fighter. I don't know if that was Danny Boyer or what, but this particular fighter had four losses, and his actual statement was, I guess Showtime didn't approve it because I got four losses. So I don't know. But the only reason why I even noticed the article is because they had a picture of Edgar. Oh, okay. Let's see what this is about. So.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, earlier we were talking about the Crawford-Lundy fight. Do you have some thoughts on that one? That's tonight.
All I know, one thing, Crawford's awful good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's awful good. And who's he fighting?
Hank Lundy
out of Philadelphia. Hammer and Hank
Lundy. He's not good enough to be in a ring with Crawford.
Yeah.
I don't think so, anyway. What do you guys think?
That's exactly what I was telling Butch, is that, I mean, Crawford, he's a tough guy. Not Crawford. Hank Lundy's a tough guy. He's a Philadelphia attitude, tough, get in your face, not afraid to fight, can box, can switch hit. But looking for the big chance. Yeah, from everything we've seen about him now, Crawford is a fringe contender. He's Hank Lundy's a fringe contender. He's not an elite fighter, especially at 140. And so I guess my only concern with Crawford is that, before I crown Crawford as a pound-for-pound fighter, I'd like to see him fight more elite competition. To me, this would be his third fight in a row against, fringe contender, somebody that we know he's
right.
Kind of
right.
Like you said it when you first, Hank Lundy, he doesn't necessarily belong in the ring with Crawford. And to me, those are Crawford's last three opponents. So we need to see him in I like to see him in with a Provitnikov. They're the same size, same weight. Just somebody, even though I think he outboxed Provitnikov, somebody who's going to test his mettle a little bit more.
You know what it is, really? If you get a good fighter, you might as well milk it and get him four or five or six easy fights. Get some money in the bank. Get some paydays because why go up against a killer just to prove that theory that, well, the guy is good, Let him coast a little bit. And then when he gets...
I think,
Why get him killed early, you know?
Like Pacquiao, too. If Pacquiao doesn't retire, that's when Bob Arum wants him to fight. So you got to keep him undefeated if you got Pacquiao on the rise, and that's the thinking.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Is that who's got him, Bob Arum?
Yeah, he's with Bob Arum.
Oh, well, Bob Arum's always angling for, for Bob Arum, you know what I mean? He's for Bob Arum. A one-way street. And that's what he might be a prospect, you know, to for a second Mayweather. Maybe, you know, there's a chance Mayweather will come out of retirement to fight Pacquiao again. If he come back and look decent, I think Mayweather would come out of retirement. You know, mm-hmm. Possibly. Give it one big last shot. But, you know, he's waiting to see what Mayweather looks like, too, you know. Mayweather looks too good. Maybe he won't want to fight him. I don't know. Who the hell knows what Mayweather, right. You know? But Crawford's got all the tools. He's got all the tools. He's lacking nothing. That guy has the potential, like you say. But, you know, like you say, you got to wait and see. He hasn't really fought, a really, really good champion or ex-champion. And what the hell ever happened to Provotnikov? We never saw him again after the Matisse fight. Did you guys see him? Or am I? Yeah, have you seen him fight?
I don't think he's had a comeback. Or he may have had a comeback fight, or he hasn't had a comeback fight yet.
I didn't think so. You know? Maybe he shot a big moose in Siberia. He got plenty to eat. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, Jesus Christ, if I lived up there, I'd be mean as hell, too. You know? Poor guy. He probably come over here. He never saw so much money, you know. And they keep giving him wars. He keeps fighting wars. Poor guy. Every time he you know. I saw the Vasquez Marquez fight the other night, and I can't even watch it anymore because about 5 days after the damn thing was over, they were doing an interview on television, and I'm watching it. And I didn't know who the guy was they were interviewing. His face was so distorted and grotesque. I thought, who the hell is that guy? I said, he must have been in a car accident. His face had to go through the windshield. It was Vasquez. I went, oh, my God. I said, he got to live in hell. His nose was broken. He had scars all over. Every part of his face was black and blue. And I thought, boy, this guy has been in too many wars. I don't think he ever fought after that series, did he? You ever see Vasquez again?
No, he retired after the last fight with Marquez.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably what's happening to Provotnikov. You get him too many tough fights too early. You know, that was a tough fight he had against Matisse. Now, Matisse got beat by that guy about 6'1". They had no business putting him in a ring with that guy. His manager should be hitting the head with a stool for that one, for allowing that to go through. You know, Jesus Christ, a guy 5'6.5" fighting a guy 6'1", it's not good. It's right. Going to make you look bad. That guy was in good shape, and he ran around the ring, and and Matisse just literally thought, I can't beat this guy. Let me get the hell out of here. You know, where's the dressing room? I'll take a shower and get out of here. So he's probably on hold for a while, you know. But I don't think he'd want to come out of retirement, so to speak, and fight a guy like Armstrong, you know.
Ty, do you talk to? I'm sorry, Chris. Still talk to?
Go ahead.
You're talking about something just hit me. Are you still talking to Amir Mansour?
Well, I haven't talked to him actually in quite some time, and I'm pretty sure his jaw might still be wired, huh? I don't know.
That's why I was just wondering. When you said that running for the dressing room, that's the first thing that hit me, Chris. That poor guy couldn't come out of the fifth round. He broke his jaw.
Yeah, you know, that injury takes a month to heal. But
yeah,
then, you know.
Not too bad, actually.
I mean.
That's not too bad.
No, the only thing is, you don't want to get it hit. Flush with another left hook at the end of the month. I mean, it'll be healed. He'll be able to close his jaw, chew, and do all those things. But they don't wire the jaw together when they do that zygomatic arc. They don't wire the jaw together. That's on his broken mandible. So he's able to eat and chew and do all that. It's just that he,
really
yeah, we've got to be careful for, well, it's 4 weeks to heal at his age, 4 weeks, and then a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks more before he can get banged on it, you know?
Yeah.
So he'll be out for a while.
All that stuff, right? Yeah, he still could do everything except get hit in it. So, he still could do all his road work if he wanted to.
Oh, yeah, he could do all his road work, gym training, back punching, whatever he wants to do. He could do all that.
Yeah.
Actually, with headgear on, he could probably train with headgear, you know. But
the kind of guy he is, I'm sure he's looking to get right back in the ring now.
Yeah, he's too old to, you know, us, you know, too old to buy. He's too old to buy green bananas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah,
and you know, especially for a fight to end like that, a fight that he was actually, you know, pretty much dominating to that point. So, yeah,
he won all five rounds. He won every damn round.
Yep.
Poor guy.
Yep.
Yeah, at 43, it's, 6 months is an eternity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Not to mention the loss pushes him further away from the goal he's trying to accomplish anyway.
Yeah, you know, that's a loss on paper, but everybody knows what happened.
This is true. This is true. And you know what? If he's with Al Heyman, he'll get another shot. The heavyweight division is.
Well, yeah. Oh, they need sure. They.
Yeah.
He's going to be a. You're going to have to get over him to get a title shot now. You know.
He's
going to be one of those
big punching heavyweight, and that's one thing that always brings excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you guys think about? We got Frampton and Quigg tonight. In fact, it's going on right now. Well, probably. Be going on in a few minutes. What do you think about that one?
Probably in the middle of it right now. You know what? Honestly, Quigg is a little bigger. He didn't look great at the weigh-in. He looked like he looked like he really had to dehydrate to make weight. With that said, I always liked Frampton's technique and speed. I think Frampton, has better technique, better speed, boxes better off the back foot is a little bit more versatile. But, I mean, Quigg is just an aggressive dude who grinds away at the body. And, you know, that's kryptonite to a counter puncher, to a slick puncher, anybody like that. So it's a very, very interesting fight. And you know what? It's a 50-50 fight. And we don't get that's my problem with the Crawford-Lundy fight. It's not a 50-50 fight. This is a true 50-50 fight. So, going in, I think it was virtually split on who people thought was going to win, and there's a very good case and path to victory for both men.
You say it's going on now at 6 o'clock it's on?
Yeah, because it's over in the UK. It's happening in Manchester.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll turn it on after the show.
I'm not sure.
I forgot about that. Hey, whatever happened to the heavyweight champion? Did he go in hiding or what? Have you heard a word about that guy?
Are you talking about
his very best friend?
Fury?
The big Irishman,
yeah.
The singer.
Yeah, they're still working out the, I guess, the particulars of the rematch.
Oh, they're going to have one then?
Supposedly.
Okay. I never saw a guy disappear. Instead of capitalizing and boosting him and building him up worldwide, you know, for the TV audiences and money fights and all that, they've done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Done nothing. I never saw a heavyweight champion so less publicized than him.
Yeah.
You know, I thought they would really jump all over and have him in and having interviews and talking and, you know. When Evander Holyfield fought Buster Douglas, the gross on the TV, they used to sell the tickets. And what do they call that when you went and you bought a ticket? It was like in the movies. Remember that when they had it on screen?
Oh yeah.
They didn't have it on television. You had to go to the movies to see it.
Right.
That fight did $72 million, which was huge for that era. For that and most of it was TV money, worldwide TV money. When Lou Duva was down in South Philadelphia, and he mentioned that. He said when the TV money got added up and thrown in, the gross was $72 million, which was a heavyweight record up to that point.
Right.
And You know, that's what I thought they'd do with this Irishman, you know, get it built up. But, you know, like they don't even consider the United States anymore. They fight over there. They don't even want to come over here.
You know, it's funny you say that because you were going to say, you know, talk about how you won the title and didn't capitalize. And what I was going to say is, you know, I think he is, but I think he's just not doing anything over here. Because, you know, I tend to some of the websites I go to are British boxing sites. And, yeah, I mean, he's always being mentioned. It's just not.
Well, I think what it is, he's too big to put on a plane and bring over here. They don't have seats for him. He'd have to stand in the aisle, you know. He don't want. So that's why they don't bring him over here. But I think he should, if he does fight and they schedule it, I think he should come over here and do the, you know, do the tour. Go through the 24/7 type thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, go through the 24/7. You don't naturally won't train over here. Don King has a palace in Germany, a training camp in Germany, second to none in the world. And I had a guy that used to spar. Well, he was on King's payroll as a heavyweight sparring partner. And he said it's a palace. And places like that, they got places to go train. Maybe he won't want to train in Dublin, but he could help to bring a team. How far is it from Ireland to Germany? What, 2-hour plane flight, maybe?
Probably can't.
Yeah, it wouldn't be bad, you know. Yeah, Don King has properties all over the world.
I texted Keith about his undercard, and they decided keeping the undercard with he and Porter, and the undercard is Abner Maris and Fernando Montiel.
So what they're going to do is are they just going to move that fight as well, or are they going to move that to the main event?
Yeah, they're going to move it, the whole thing. They canceled the original fight. And they're going to keep this card together, but as soon as he's well enough to do it, and it'll be now rescheduled for a later date on CBS.
You know what? You're absolutely right, because the chief support was the Abner Maris Fernando Montiel fight, and there was a part of me initially that thought they would just make that the main event. So I'm kind of glad they're keeping that card together, because I didn't necessarily think that at this point was a main event fight. So that's good news.
Yeah, and you know, I know Kathy will be happy to hear that NBC is going to go back with boxing on April 16th.
I'm sorry.
That's their kickoff with Earl the Truth Spence going against Mr. Chris Algieri in a 10
round. Yeah, Kathy's not going to be happy about that because that's still Heyman.
No, you.
Yeah, that's still
her fighter. Her fighter's fighting Algieri.
No. Errol Spence is. Errol Spence is.
They're trying to recycle that guy. That guy can't fight.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. It's a good step up for Errol Spence, though. Errol Spence is the prospect that a lot of people
feel
is the future of the welterweight division. This will definitely be his toughest fight by far. So,
yeah.
It'll be
What about her light heavyweight? What's he doing?
We haven't heard Kovalevsky.
Yeah, Kovalevsky or whatever his name is. When's he fighting?
He just had that fight with Jean Pascal a few weeks ago. So, you know, he's just
a few weeks
right
ago.
Now.
I must have missed it. Really, I didn't even know he was.
It was when you were
who
down
won?
In Puerto Rico.
Oh, he knocked Pascal out a round earlier than he did last time. This time.
But I
can't get anything. You don't get anything in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Except sun. That's about all you get down there.
Yeah,
they don't have anything on TV.
On NBC, the Galecki is going to fight one Mr. Stevie USS Cunningham.
Now, that's a good fight.
I'll get a hold of Stevie tomorrow and see if we can't get him on next week.
Galecki's the guy who just went and took Huck's belt, if I'm correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, that should be pretty interesting. What's going to be interesting is for Stevie in his late 30s, to see how his body handles going back to cruiserweight. But the big thing is he's a guy who never, you know, it's not like he had to put on a lot of muscle to fight at heavyweight. He just cut a little less weight. You know, he never came in, you know, at 220 or 230. He always just came in right around between 209 and 203. So, you know, he's really, for him, it's just shedding a few more pounds. But it's interesting to see how his body will respond.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember when Eddie Chamber dropped the cruiserweight and he just, and his body didn't respond. Same thing happened to Chris Burns.
Yeah. Right. In fact, I tried to get a hold of Chris Burns the other day. And he, even his manager has changed. The guy ahead was his manager. Yeah. So, I'll have to go back through my phone. And
Chris Burns can't fight in that heavyweight division. He can't even fight in a cruiserweight division. He lost it. Last time I saw him, he had nothing.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think
exactly.
He didn't have anything. He done. He couldn't hit hard enough. He couldn't hit. Cruiserweight's a tough damn division. Them guys hit hard, and he's not a puncher. He's just not a puncher, and that's all there is to it.
And what also happens, too, is you know, you take a guy like Chris Burns, Eddie Chambers, you know, these guys who are smaller, kind of quicker heavyweights, they go to cruiserweight, but they're not that quick anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
the other guys are fast. They're faster than they are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hey, Chris, when we last week we had Tony Thompson on, and he's got a fight coming up with Ortiz the 18th of March in Washington. First time he's fought in the country in a long time.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't fought in the country.
What do you think about that?
At least he gets to fight home, too.
Yes.
Good luck with Ortiz. I think that guy's, ooh, he's tough. He's tough to fight.
Tony
Jesus,
said,
God.
Was, one thing I read is Tony said, of course he was going to get in shape. There was no way he wants to go ahead and get his butt kicked on HBO at home.
No. No, he's going to, he better do his best. He's in there with a guy that's good for the full length of the fight. He's out to knock you out, you know, the full length of the fight. He impressed me. He impressed me. I'd like to see him against a guy his weight and his size.
I haven't seen him against a big guy like Tony.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
He's a pretty big guy himself, but he's not as big as Tony. So it'd be interesting to see how he handles, you know, the range, the distance, the size, you know. You just want to see him. And that's what I want to see with Crawford, too. It's the same thing you want to see with Crawford. I was comparing these two guys before you got on the phone. To me, Luis Ortiz and Terrence Crawford both easily pass the eye test, Dr. Chris. They look like they can do it all in the ring. But you just need to see them with the kind of guys that can really test them to you really.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You know?
And I think Tony is a good test at this stage for Luis Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
probably right.
Since, you know,
he'll be a stepping. Yeah, he's a stepping stone now, Tony. He'll be a stepping stone. You know, if the guy gets by him.
He matches all the champions, too, Dr. Chris. Physically, all the champions, you know, Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, all these big, tall guys, and so is Tony Thompson. So I think it's nice for Luis Ortiz to kind of see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they are getting big. Aren't these
guys
big? Jesus, God, they're big.
April 23rd, we have another big fight coming up with Triple G and Chocolito.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that
Triple
one,
Triple G.
Yeah, Triple G fighting Dominic Wade, who, you know, it's funny because Wade, is, you know, the former, you know, United States amateur, you know, undefeated guy. And, you know, if you would have asked me about maybe a year ago, I would have said, you know, this guy, man, Wade might be okay in a few years. But he fought Sam Solomon, and 41-year-old Sam Solomon, and, he, you know, he really was very fortunate to get that decision. And, you know, I give him credit for jumping at the opportunity to fight Triple G. But based on that Sam Solomon fight, he is not ready at all. But then again, who is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Chris? He'll get in the ring and say, what in the hell am I doing in here? You know, who the hell scheduled this fight? That guy comes after you.
I will say is the kid, he's young. He's, you know, he's a good-sized middleweight. He's got pretty quick hands, pretty decent pop. So he's got some attributes, but he's just, I mean, you know, Golovkin's a different level. And this kid has never been in the ring with anything close to that.
Well, that's a real jump, man. Sam Solomon to Triple G? Whoa.
Yeah, 41
Whoa.
Sam Solomon to Triple G. Huge jump.
And he fights crazy anyway, Solomon. Got the craziest style. He makes everybody look bad. And you know, like you say, I saw that fight. He was lucky to win. And as bad as Solomon was, But, you know, when Danny Jacobs, is it, that knocked out Quillen?
Yeah.
So the guy gets on, he says, who's going to be your next fight? Would you like to fight Triple G? And he goes, talk to my manager. The guy isn't hot off the oven. You know, he just got out of one tough fight, and they want to throw him in with Triple G. Let him make a few bucks. I think a Quillen rematch should be made before he fights anybody, because he got one of them lucky punches in early, and that's how he won the damn fight. You know, you don't know what would have happened. Quillen hung in there. Quillen's pretty tough.
Yeah,
he hung in there. He did not want to go down. He was hanging in there, and he was doing the best he could. He should have gone down and taken an 8 count.
Chris, it's funny because I would love to see a rematch. And kind of like you, when a fight ends so quickly and abrupt like that, you know, the guy didn't get a chance to warm his way into the fight. But at the same time, one thing that I noticed, and this is one thing Zito and I said right after the fight, Quillen didn't seem like he wanted a rematch. Maybe not at the time because he just got knocked out. But
he got shocked. You know, he was in shock. Yeah.
But you know, one thing about Peter Quillen is he's a smart business guy. You know, he's smart when it comes to business. And it always seemed like, you know, he wasn't one of those super passionate boxers, you know, in the sense of the box. He was more of a boxing businessman, very smart guy. And there's a part of me that I felt almost after the fight with Danny Jacobs that his passion was kind of like, okay. Like his passion almost wasn't there. You know, he wasn't.
I know, Jeff. Yeah, he was kind of like the quarterback after the Super Bowl game, you know?
Exactly, yes, very good.
How this happened to me, you know? He was mad at, you know. That was a hell of a game, by the way, guys. Hell of a game.
Yeah. You know what? I like
everybody's winning. Oh, I do, too. I do, too. That was, to me, a marvel. I can't believe that defensive end was that. I didn't know he was that good, Von Miller.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he had a great game, didn't he?
They just did the combines, and they had Von Miller's running the combines, his statistics against the combine. He's fast as lightning, that guy.
Yeah.
You know what?
He's got a hell of a combine record.
I always thought that Carolina's offense would eventually let them down. I thought their defense could hold, but I always said to myself, you know what, Cam Newton puts a lot on his shoulders, and they don't have a lot of speed at the wide receiver slots. Somebody's going to slow them. Once they put pressure on him and bottle him up, they're going to be a very beatable team. And Denver, you know, I didn't know their defense was as good as it was in spite of the statistical ranking, but, man, they bottled him up.
That was a defensive that was a genius of a game. I thought that was just a great game. I mean, those guys were like lightning, DeMarcus Ware and him. They were in there, boom, boom. And, you know, and the trouble was Cam Newton read too many press clippings, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to run away. It'll be 26-0 in the first quarter. And, you know, he already had the Super Bowl ring and all, you know. You got to learn that anybody, you know, once you get hit, anything can happen, and they got the first break of the game and turned the whole game around with that fumble going in the end zone and scoring. Now he's got to play from behind, and
which
that's another damn ball game.
They would always score a lot of points in the first half, and then in the second half, teams would kind of make it close against them sometimes, but they weren't putting up a lot of points in the second half for such a high volatile offense.
Exactly.
When they gave up that lead to Denver, I said, that's it. That's it.
That's
not going
back. That's what I thought. I said he ain't coming back from this.
Nope, not at all.
Now Denver's front running, man. They know they can get to them, and they got them bottled up. They're just going to play free and loose. And those guys came in like flying in there. Jesus.
Yep.
I mean, they were unstoppable, and that was a decent offensive line they were playing against, you know?
I think they realize that, hey, look, the receivers can't beat us. All we have to do is make sure the quarterback doesn't beat us. We got him. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. And they stopped that big running back pretty good, too.
Oh, my God. Didn't
they?
Before we end the show, we're getting close to our hour here, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk about David Haye and his latest adventure. He's launched a campaign to get.
Oh, I thought you were talking about his hair.
Muhammad Ali knighthood.
Oh yeah.
That's well deserved. Well deserved.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I went online and I saw that and I actually clicked on it because I thought it's very well deserved. It's
sure.
Very well deserved. You know what? And he was a world champion at the time where world champions were world champions. They weren't German champions or American champions. They didn't fight just Germany or just America. They fought all over the world. And they were, you know, ambassadors of the sport to the world. And I think that's one reason why boxing is kind of lacking, because we don't have those world ambassadors. You know, they're ambassadors for a region, but not necessarily the world. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things have changed.
Yep.
Muhammad Ali was probably the last great global sportsman boxing's had.
Sure.
You know, Tyson was a global phenomenon, but Muhammad Ali was the last true great, you know, global ambassador to the sport of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Sugar Ray Leonard, who was, you know, a marvelous ambassador for boxing. He didn't do the world travel and, you know, have the world recognition that Ali had. So
right.
I think, you know, if anybody from America in boxing circles deserves a knighthood, it's Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had one night, I went to Madison Square Garden to see Ali fight Patterson, and we had press passes. So we interviewed him after the fight. And I was supposed to be from the Philadelphia Daily News, and my old trainer Zeke was from the Inquirer. That was one of the funniest evenings I ever. He is so entertaining. I don't care where he is or when it is. He's an entertainer. He had us laughing. I mean, he was funny, and he didn't get mad until one guy questioned him. One guy questioned him. He said, "You sure you're going to South Africa for the so that everybody could see you fight down there, or are you doing it just for the money?" Well, he got hot.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah, I was shocked at the guy. I said to him, "You ruined the interview," I told this guy. "You ruined the interview. He was doing great. We're having a million laughs. You got to come up with something like that." I said, "You ruined the damn interview." Boy, it burned me. I smell like
you guys weren't even really from the paper anyway.
Yeah, we were. That's right. Well, they thought I was. They didn't know me. They didn't know who the hell I was.
You ruined my fake interview.
Yeah.
I love it.
So we're laughing. His father's behind him with a white suit and a white hat and a black tie, and they got their fancy outfits on, and they all wanted to make sure they were there, you know. And he's Ali saying, "My God, Floyd gave me a tough fight." He said, "I didn't think he could fight. You know, I didn't think he was going to give me that tough a fight." I'm thinking, where were you? He didn't touch you once in seven rounds. And even Floyd started laughing. Floyd was laughing.
Was this the fight where he punished Floyd? The what's my name? One of the what's my name fights against Floyd? Or
Floyd Patterson? Yeah, he went about eight rounds and they stopped it on a cut.
Yeah,
you know,
he punished him.
But Ali, if you talk to Ali, he's trying to tell you what a great fight it was and how tough it was, and we're all looking at one another. We said, "Are you kidding?" You know, so Floyd starts laughing. You know, he knew he didn't even come near Ali. He didn't even get near him. Oh, he got. And when they were sitting together, you saw the difference in size was huge. I don't think Floyd weighed 190 pounds, if that, and Ali looked like he was about 225.
Man.
It was a 30-pound weight difference, and you know, and God, he had to be 4 inches taller than him.
And then
he's agile.
He's a big agile guy too. You know, he's not like a big stalker, a big goofy guy.
Well, you remember how Floyd came in with the peekaboo style?
Yeah.
That was made for Ali. He just bop 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 bop, danced around, moved around, smacked him on the side of the head, one side to the other. Bump. I don't think Floyd got his gloves dirty in that fight. They didn't even get wet. I mean, he didn't land nothing.
Yeah,
but if you listen to Ali, it was the greatest fight of the century.
Ali just smacked him and turning him the whole fight.
Very comical interview because my buddy that was with me, he was talking about fighting Frazier again, you know? And that steamed up Ali, but not in a bad way. Joe Frazier, you know how he liked to make fun of him.
And
that got him started, and we were having a great time. When the hell you ever get a chance to interview Ali? And this jerk got to make that statement. boy, he burned me up. Ali said the interview's over, and he stormed out of there. Man, I gave that guy hell.
He ruined.
Boy, he left. He got up and walked out.
Wow.
Well, that guy insulted him, him, and I go, what in the hell are you trying to make? You know, history. He's trying to make I didn't even know the guy was like from somewhere like the Boston Globe or something, whatever paper I never heard of. I don't know where the hell he. No, Ali got up and said this interview's over, and took off, and they all stormed out, and it was a great evening. I mean, I was so furious at that guy because there was only about 10 guys interviewing Ali. And he thought we were from the Inquirer. So he was treating us like
really
we knew.
Funny. That's what's really funny about the story. You're like, this guy's from some paper I never heard of. Well, I'm from some paper I'm pretending to be from.
I never heard of this clown. He probably was there like us. He probably got a free ticket to get the hell in and interview him. You know?
That's why you never heard of his newspaper either.
That's why I never heard of him. He never heard of me, he heard of me after that fight because I told him the hell off, man. I was mad at him for that. I said, what the hell's wrong with you? Asking him, you insulted him, you know? he got up and left, and Floyd was still sitting there. Floyd was still sitting there. Ali said, this interview's over. You know, and he got up and stormed out of there. And he was actually enjoying himself. He was laughing, too. He was enjoying himself. I mean, it was great set up the way they had it. They had about 10 newspaper guys and then Ali's entourage. And what the hell was his name? Bundini?
Oh, Bundini Brown? Bundini Brown.
Bundini Brown. He was Bundini back Brown. There. And Clay's brother, Ali's brother at the time, he was still, I don't even know if he was still Ali at that time or he was still Clay.
Yeah,
it might have been Clay at the time. I forget when he changed over. But he was there. The father was there with a white suit. Man, he looked like $1 million. They were all dressed, you know, Madison Square Garden. That was the first time he fought there. I don't think he ever fought there till that evening.
Oh, so that was before the Frazier fight. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, it was way before the Frazier fight. Yeah, way before.
But he defended his title, so he was Ali then if he was defending his title.
Yeah, he's giving him a payday, showing up in New York for The Madison Square Garden had just moved to the new location. Remember the old building? The old building looked like a steel shack, painted gray. It was ugly, and the seating wasn't good. And this place was gorgeous. They were just showing off the new garden, you know. That guy. We were supposed to be. I'll tell you who got us the tickets to do the interview. Teddy Brenner, he ran the fights at Eastern Parkway Arena for about 20 years. And Zeke fought there. And that's who got us the press passes. And I let Dustin Hoffman in. He came by me, and he wanted to go talk to Ali. And I was working the gate. And when he walked by me, I said, Rasso, you remember the movie Midnight Cowboy?
Yeah,
sure.
I do, yes.
Sure.
Dustin, his name was Ratso in the movie, Ratso. So when I said Ratso, the whole New York people that were around, you know, was roped off. Otherwise, there'd be 1,000 people in Ali's dressing room. Well, they said, Ratso, was that Dustin Hoffman? I said, yeah. Now, he tried to come out and go out the same way. He got mobbed. He got mobbed, and he ran back in the dressing room and ran out the other door. I'll tell you what, he didn't weigh any more than 125 Yeah, he's a little skinny guy, weighed about 125 pounds. And when I yelled Ratso, he like put his hand over his mouth, like, shut up. Like, you know how they put the finger up there, be quiet. Guys, I started to laugh. Yeah, okay.
Guys, we're at the end of our hour here, so, Chris, I want to
thank you. All right. Talk to you next week, guys.
Chris,
I'll
thank
talk
you.
During the week, Chris.
See you now. All right, bye.
Okay. Hey, well, that was an invigorating interview.
It was. You know, you kind of never know what's going to happen with Dr. Chris. First, he has a secretary on his cell phone. Did he's mad at a guy at a real newspaper for asking a question when he himself is not even at a newspaper? That's just amazing to me.
I'll tell you, I was with him. He went down. We were down in Atlantic City, and Jake LaMotta was being the host at a thing, and he goes up and he got right in Jake's face. And before I knew it, we're trying to usher Chris out the door because
Chris
was his daddy.
Boy, oh boy.
But that's Chris.
I mean, they both were middleweights, right? So.
Yeah. I appreciate your coming back. I know you got a lot of professional duties now and that you're moving up in certain worlds. And we're always proud to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's always good to be here. Bob is our co-pilot, and I will talk to you next week, my friend. Hello?